Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday morning to you all. Andrew Destin and Jason Mackey, of course, coming to you with our weekly Pirates chat and coming to you on the heels of, well, I'll put it this way. Going into Monday's game, Pirates-Braves, was thinking it was an uneven matchup because Spencer Strider in the bump for the Braves. Turns out it was an uneven matchup. He stood no chance against the vaunted Pirates offense. They tag him for 6 runs and 2 2/3, get the victory, eke it out 7-6. Impressive win, a lot of big takeaways, but let's just start there, Jason. I did not see that coming. Spencer Strider's been great.
You didn't have that on the bingo card, huh?
No. It was not G64 for me.
Same here, man. Same here. I love watching Spencer Strider pitch. I really do. And I also loved watching Spencer Strider just because it was great theater, get taken out of the game and, like, throw the ball to the dugout. Like, he's sort of showing up as manager, but he was – irritated after the game. I went up to the MLB.com writer Mark Bowman and just to make sure that, like, my eyes corroborated what I thought I saw or whatever, and Bo was like, yeah, he was mad. I'm like, okay, good. So the guys that cover him realized, like, how agitated he was too. But, you know, in most of it with two outs, right? Yeah. Like, Connor Joe's grounder to short was the second out of the inning and the Pirates just kept going. I thought they had some really, really, really good at bats. And that we're going to get into this more, Andrew, but I thought that kind of spoke to what the Pirates can be. They don't need somebody to put the ball over the fence. It would certainly be nice, and I'd like to see them add power as much as the next person. But if you're going to work walks, you're going to put the bat on the ball. They were more aggressive than they were in Milwaukee. I like what this lineup did, and it just frustrated the heck out of Spencer Strider. Like, he made some decent pitches, and the Pirates handled them very well. So, again, I didn't have it on the bingo card. Spencer Strider's been absolutely incredible. His, you know, I had some fun with the numbers in my game story about his strikeout total and the Braves being 18-4 when he pitched and all this stuff. I mean, he's just been so darn good, and the Pirates handled it.
Yeah, they got after him, and it was that lineup, like you said. I mean, yeah, you had Connor Joe at a home run. I believe it was in the fourth inning, the seventh run for the Pirates. But aside from that, it's just keeping the line moving. I think it was, you know, everybody who started, every position player who started had a base hit except for Alika Williams, and he's somebody who had been hot during that Milwaukee series. So, I mean, a takeaway that comes to mind for me is that, yeah, if you have a deep lineup that maybe isn't the most power-ridden, which, you know, the Braves lineup certainly is with their league-leading home run totals, but if this Pirates team – but, yeah, I mean, listen, it's you know, you're under 500, 10 games south of it. You know, playoffs is obviously something that is a pipe dream, if that, at this point, right? You're playing for implications beyond that. You're seeing what you got that sticks. And if this is a team that, you know, like, take for instance, Endy's hitting the ball well. Maybe he only goes 1-for-3, but he was hitting the ball well all night. Those are the kind of signs that you look toward as things to build on for the future, right? Versus, hey, we're looking for result-driven stuff tonight. It's the at-bats guys are putting together against really good pitchers. Because you know you're going to get those pro at-bats from a guy like Andrew McCutchen. But the younger guys, the second time through, getting a Strider, I think that speaks a lot of volumes, right?
This game, to me, was so maddeningly who the Pirates are right now.
Yeah.
That, again, they knocked Strider out of the game. That was very impressive. You could point to other positives. You know, like, I really liked what Carmen Majinski did. Came in, got 4 solid outs. Even Angel Perdomo, pumping 95-mile-an-hour heat past 2 batters. That very important. Osvaldo Beto started the game in terrific fashion. His velocity through three innings was outstanding. And we'll talk about Beto here in a little bit and where that leaves him. But, you know, some very enticing things. I liked what Henry Davis did in the third inning. I hated what Henry Davis did in the outfield where he overran a ball. And that's a separate discussion about him playing right field. Jared Triolo, his catch at third base, that was huge. If that thing drops in, I mean, that's a completely different game. It might be a Pirates loss, a very big catch. Andy Rodriguez has the double to get the Pirates going and then nearly gets picked off of first base the second or the inning later. He had one ball squared away and then made a throw down to second base that was far closer than anybody would have liked. So, like, you're seeing these signs of positivity, of stuff like what this team can be once it grows up, right? And it's probably like any teenager. You're seeing little signs of maturity, and then you're like, oh, we got to work on this. That sort of stuff. And, you know, that's the way I look at the rest of this stretch, Andrew, and the rest of the season, really. I just want to see more of the good moments and the teases for what this team can be, and less of the growth moments or whatever that, you know, the less of the Henry Davis overrunning a ball, the less of the ball squirting away from Andy, the less of how Osvaldo Beto looked in the fourth inning, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Want to unwrap a couple of things you mentioned there. One being Jared Triolo just comes to mind, and I know we're going to get talk about guys and positions that they're playing and whatnot, but I mean, the third base he's played, right? Let's not get into that discussion. Yeah, it looks really good, and it's his natural spot. And I know he's capable of a defender at a lot of other spots, and you got to see him play, I think it was 7 innings worth of ball at second base in Milwaukee. You know, capable of moving around the diamond, the bat. He's put the ball in play for a pretty good average, but the power's not there. He's an intriguing guy. I really don't know yet what the Pirates have in him, and I don't know if the Pirates know what they have in him yet. But what do you make of, like, I mean, Hayes is back. He's playing. He's not going to be quite every day as they kind of ramp him back up to speed, but like, how would you kind of tackle this, what they're doing with third base with Triolo? Is that what, I mean, for the intermittent, right? Yeah, you get him out there twice, maybe 3 times a week, just as you keep working Hayes back. But what's the long-term plan after that? How would you navigate this Triolo situation, just given how the infield is kind of composed, and I guess also the outfield, because he played there a little bit in the minors too?
I don't know. I don't like that. That's the easiest thing I can come up with. And right now, I honestly think this is set up perfectly for the Pirates, because Triolo, unless he hits for more power, I don't think can be your everyday first baseman. Just because he can play the position defensively, I don't. They need more pop. They need somebody over there that can put the ball over the fence. And Jared Triolo is not that guy. Now, I really like Jared Triolo as an option. I mean, if he's coming off your bench, if he's filling in various spots, I love the idea that he can go basically anywhere on the field and not be out of his depth. And we've seen that. Like, I didn't notice him whatsoever at second base. He was just fine. He can also play shortstop. He can also play the outfield, corner infield, no big deal. But it's set up perfectly. And why I say that, you don't want to give too much on Ke'Bryan Hayes. Ke'Bryan Hayes also hasn't been very good. Obviously, defensively, he's been fine. But, you know, that his start since he's come back, I think 1-for-14, 1-for-15, 6 strikeouts, something like that. Like, he's not looked good. And so if he's healthy, I don't know. If he is healthy, it's non-productive. So, yeah, you're going to work Triolo in and give him opportunities. And, you know, maybe work him in at some first base, bounce him around, whatever. Find out what you have in him. I don't know. And, I wish I felt more encouraged about Ke'Bryan Hayes than I do, certainly. And I think long-term, you just – like, they need power at one of those two spots, Andrew, don't they? Like, that – you can't not have pop at first and third. You're not expecting it up the middle, certainly. You know, you're going to get it from the outfield spots, but I shouldn't say that they won't get it up the middle, because you'll have O'Neill Cruz back. It's just I wish that spot at first base had more power coming out of it, and Triolo doesn't serve that end. So I don't know. We'll see. But for the rest of the season, I'm fine with what they're doing.
So you're saying no Henry Davis at first base. You agree with Derek Shelton on that one, then?
I'm saying no Derek Shelton at first, or no Derek, well, no Shelton at first base too. I'm saying no Henry at first base because he hasn't played first base ever. Like, we put him in right field and it's bad. So where do we think it's going to be in a position that he's literally never played in his life? No. I'll let him grow in right field. I'm okay with that. I don't understand why we're not catching him still. Like, I mean, I understand the reasoning for it and I respect it. You know, one of the ideas is that he can affect the entire pitching staff by being bad, and that's true. They're also, like, what did you say, 10.5 games out of first place. Like, who cares? Take a look. If they lose a game, oh, well. Like, you have to get – the reason they took the kid 1-1 is for him to catch, for him to catch and add value behind the plate. I understand and respect that that's not right now. Endy is your better catcher right now. Okay, but what are we efforting toward that end? And to me, playing him at first base only obfuscates that. The immediate goal should be like, you're going to play right field as well as you can, get better at that. We're going to sprinkle you in with some catching duties. That should be Henry Davis's job description. I don't understand why the catching isn't more of a heightened part, but dude, I don't want to go to first base. Want Henry to go to first base. Like, I don't understand that, like, desire among Pirates fans. I feel like that's just, I mean, you're also taking one of the two best arms on the team and wasting it. Why? If you want to rip the Band-Aid off and say, this dude's going to be your everyday right fielder, we're going to live with it, it might suck for the rest of the year. I can understand that more than I can him going to first base.
Yeah, I'm there with you. It's just a fun conversation I had to throw on you because I know pregame.
It's not a fun conversation. It's not. No. I'm not having fun. I'm kidding.
Oh, yeah. It's the catcher part is fun.
What would you do with Henry?
Oh, literally any position besides first base. His arm is I'd put him at shortstop.
Henry at shortstop. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd do that before first base. You have a cannon, use it. Like, and right field's. I'm honestly not against the right field thing. He's flashed enough at times that I think you give him 1,000 reps out there, he gets better. He is a good athlete. Like, I feel like that will come in time. You know, the moments from last night, certainly not desirable, but, like, those are just growing pains, right? That's not some representative thing of what the next decade of Henry in right field would be if that's what it was, right? So,
yeah, that's just and I mean,
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
To me, with Henry Davis, you have to get through the end of the regular season. And feeling like you learned something and developed. If they were in the middle of a division chase, I would not be doing this with Henry. I'd probably be DHing him. I wouldn't waste the reps because I couldn't afford the consequences. I can now. As you know, if I was running the Pirates, yes, it stinks that he missed the ball. Yes, it stinks that his outfield defense is very rough around the edges. But I should be thinking about next year. And would I rather have it be bad now and then have Henry Davis learn enough, take it into the offseason, work on it maniacally, and come back opening day 2024 as like a pretty good right fielder? Yes, I would. That's the way this should be designed. So I don't understand where, you know, going to first base is also going to do that. You know, but I do understand the catching situation to where if they can have him and Endy catch, you're not wasting a roster spot on a backup catcher. You can do something else with your roster. And I'm fine with if Endy's your everyday guy, that's fine. Endy, when he's not catching, can go to first base. You know, and you just kind of you invert it like that, but you keep their bats in the lineup more often than not. I think that's a really smart idea. But part of getting there is living with Henry's shortcomings and right, and then also allowing him to catch.
Yeah, it's a smart idea. I mean, it's something that certainly if you can maximize it, there's a lot of potential there. They just have to actually put it into practice. And, you know, it's a good problem to have if you, in theory, are catching Davis once, twice a week and proves more than capable back there. But, yeah, something to keep tunes on or keep eyes on for the next 50 games or so. But where the Pirates, unfortunately for their sake, don't have quite as much depth or talent or whatever you want to use it to work with, talk about the rotation. It's Waldo Beto. You kind of tipped it a little bit there earlier. Starting last night, looked great through three innings, was pumping 98 miles an hour. Fourth inning, things started to unravel. And post game, you and I both saw him hugging some teammates, which, as any baseball fan knows at this point, usually signals a move back down to the minors. So yeah. Fabito, likely on the way out. I believe you saw also, I did not, Yerry De Los Santos hugging teammates too. So let's just start there, I guess, with the rotation depth. I know basically right now you're looking at with Keller, Falter, Priester, and Oviedo. Now we can safely assume, for the sake of this podcast, that Beto out. How do you fill that fifth spot? And then I guess what do you do for filling both spots? Is that Thomas Hatch that comes in for De Los Santos? But let's start there with rotation. What do you do with the Beto fifth spot?
Yeah, Luis Ortiz. Yeah, that's the route I'm going there. I don't know that for a fact yet. I'm working on it, trying to get that confirmed or find out what they're doing. But that's the way I would go. And I think that makes the most sense. I think he's, you know, has been better of late. I want to see what he has. He's a guy that you need to hit on. I think he's going to be ahead of Rowanzi Contreras in terms of who they're going to bring up here. But I think both of them need to potentially play parts in what the Pirates are doing. And so, I go Ortiz and then Hatch. Sure. Fine. I think that's probably the most likely. I want to see Colin Selby up here too, Andrew. 40-man guy. You know, he's been pitching really well down there. Basically out of the closer's role, has racked up some saves, throws in the upper 90s. I think he's going to get a chance at some point. But it does seem a little coincidental that, like, you know, they bring in Hatch. We don't quite know where he's being assigned, you know, I guess for the time being, Indy. But, you know, they need pitching, sending Yuri out, sending Beto out. That would make the most sense. I do like Beto. I know you asked more about the rotation spot, yep. But sure. I am curious to see if they don't send Beto down and say, okay, you're a reliever now. We're going to work on you in 1-3 inning spurts. And I have a feeling this could be something the Pirates might try to do down the stretch. I think Ben Charrington kind of tipped his hand a little bit on his radio show after Andre Jackson pitched so well in Milwaukee in that 3-inning spurt. You might see more of like lengthier relief outings picked in specific situations. And Beto strikes me as that guy where, like, I'm good with you coming through the order one time. I'm not good with you going through the order two times. And I might not be good with you in high leverage situations. I think I'm going to leave that to like Majinski, Holderman, maybe Perdomo, and then Bednar. But they need guys like Jackson, Beto, to eat multiple innings there, especially if they want to maybe shorten some starts down the stretch. So to me, that's what makes sense for Beto, but maybe you take him back to the minors and let him get his, you know, let him get a little bit more comfortable with that stuff.
Yeah.
No, what about you? What do you think? I'm blasting.
No, you're good. It's there was a couple of thoughts that came to mind. I'm right there with you on Luis Ortiz. You know, he's certainly a name that comes to mind. I think Rose probably a little ways away, just given that, you know, he's only pitched 2 innings, I think it was, in single A for Bradenton on either Friday or Saturday, coming back after some time in the complex league, kind of figuring some things out. He's certainly a name that comes to mind, but probably a ways away. But, you know, another one was Cam Aldred. I thought about him, but just given the way that the month of July went for him, had an ERA over 8, was kind of shuffling back and forth between that starting and relieving role. After kind of finding lightning in a bottle as a starter in June, where maybe he could have had an opportunity there, but the timing wasn't quite right for him to come up here. He's certainly a name. And the one that comes to mind for me, and this might be a total long shot, but he you know, it popped into the mind, so I think it's worth bringing up, is Jared Jones. I know, right now, he's probably not ready, in my opinion. I think the changeup still needs work. The fastball and the slider are totally, totally legitimate. They're plus pitches. But, you know, I think it's maybe not quite time, but don't be surprised because I bring that up for one reason. And that's because you kind of mentioned the opportunity for guys like an Andre Jackson to be a multiple inning reliever, you know, go one time fully through the order. Well, Jared Jones, he's somebody that you could kind of protect and see what you have in him and give him a few starts and say, hey, we're going to have you go one time through, or maybe try to get 4 innings out of you rather than try and force it. And maybe that helps, you know, even Quinn Priester, if you decide to go that route with him. You know, that's me more speculating on my part than anything. But it's an interesting, you know, thought exercise of just, hey, do you truly, you know, for lack of better phrasing, you're rushing a guy in Jared Jones, considering he started the year in Altoona, and this is a guy who just turned of legal age at 21. So You know, I'm probably jumping the gun there, but Jared Jones enters the mind. I might be totally off base.
I think you are, but I think it's a good discussion point. I think a lot of Pirates fans are probably eager to see Jared Jones, and for good reason. I totally understand it. I hope and want to see him up here too, and I think we will. I think it's too early, though. I don't know. I could be very wrong and get a text that says, you know, Jared Jones is coming up right after we finish recording this, and then I'll look like a bonehead, but that's okay. If you're going to ask me what I think the smarter move is based on what they typically do, it's Luis Ortiz, and he's got more experience in the big leagues. Like, I'm all for giving guys Jared Jones' age, and he's 22. I thought he was 21 as well, Andrew. But,
happy birthday.
Yeah. When is his birthday? Did we just missed it. Yeah. We just missed it. August 6th. I'm sorry, Jared. Born a day before Sidney Crosby. Anyway, so he just turned 22. He's pitched well in AAA, not knocking the AAA work, but he's 8 games, 7 starts, 450 ERA, 40 innings, 15 walks, 48 strikeouts. I mean, that's pretty darn good. But that's not somebody I feel like I have to promote at this point. I just don't. Like, I think Luis Ortiz, you deserve to give another shot to. He's been up here. He's proven himself. You're working on stuff. You want to reward that work. And seemingly by everything we hear, like, he has shown improvement. He's done what was asked of him. He deserves a chance again. I think we see Jared Jones in September. I do. And I think they're going to have a need for it. But right now I want to see Ortiz in that rotation. And frankly, it intrigues me, right? If you go Keller, Oviedo, Priester, Falter, Ortiz. I mean, there's some question marks with all of that, certainly. I mean, we've seen all of 4 innings from Bailey Falter, although I did like them. And I want to see guys down the stretch. I want to see Roback. I want to see Jackson Wolf get a chance. I want to see Jared Jones, like we're talking about. But for right now, to me, that's the more deserving first option because of what Ortiz has done and some of the flashes that he's shown. I mean, this is a kid, let's not forget, pitching the World Baseball Classic. Like, not by accident. You know, he's very good. Has had some problems, but he's very good.
Right. And it feels like an opportunity again to continue further seeing what you have in him, right? This is a 2-month stretch. You got, yep, gave him some runway last year, gave him some this year. I'm not going to say this is, you know, his last opportunity or speak in definites like that. I'm not Ben Charrington, but like, this feels like an opportunity where you see, okay, can he cut it as a starter, or do we have to have the conversation of, is this a reliever? Which, if he is, he can certainly be a highly effective big leaguer in that aspect, at least I think, just based off the stuff and, you know, well, I'll just stop it there. The stuff. I mean, it's great, right? The guy who pumps 100.
Literally, when you throw 100, that's good.
Yeah.
That's sort what of. I've become. Although he hasn't thrown 100, and that's going to be people's pushback. Say, he doesn't throw 100 anymore. Well,
right. Yeah. I feel like it's still in the can. Maybe it's just, oh, you know, he's trying to lengthen it out for a start and not blow past people in the second inning. But what do I know? But yeah, no, it's interesting.
The problem, this is going to lead to my flipping out about something. I just hate how much they fill these kids' heads with. Hey, you're throwing 100 miles an hour. I'm not saying everything is great and like that should just get you a ticket to like not be coached. But there's a certain element of like, what you're doing is really good. Just keep doing it. I'm going to leave you alone. Like, if we had a really good writer on our staff, our sports editor, Ryan Wynn, probably wouldn't go in there and start like, so, okay, yeah, but you got to do this, 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 and this, and this. No, you just let the dude do his thing. You know, that's what I mean. I just don't totally understand. We need to like worry about the speed of Rowanzi's delivery. Rowanzi's delivery was just fine. I feel like we're tinkering a little bit. Now, Ortiz, there was some concern about him tipping pitches. And if that's what we're working on here, I'm okay with that. I think it's bigger than that. But I think what you're seeing, and sorry, this is kind of a tangent that just it's sort of a sticking point for me. Like, you see Priester, you see Rowanzi, you see Ortiz, all of their velocities have gone down. And it's not just because they, you know, they're not dealing with like ragged elbows and they're just deciding to pitch anyway. Like, have you ever tried to do something you're thinking too much? It's exactly what's happening here. And they're being forced to think about too much and not rely as much on natural athletic ability. It's just frustrating. I think it's in there. And I hope they have worked to untangle all of the things in Ortiz and Rowanzi. And they still have some stuff to do with Quinn in that regard. But like, I want to see these guys pitching more the way they have in the past and less this, you know, almost like robotic way that like that's exactly the opposite of what the Pirates went into this thinking they were going to do, this player-centric culture. It's not player-centric to get players to adhere to your previous philosophy. That's what the previous regime did that got them fired, that screwed up people's development. Don't be so adherent to this cookie-cutter model. Let guys be themselves. They're going to have some faults. But if you're throwing 100, if you're throwing 97 and pitching the way Rowanzi has, I'm okay with that. You can live with some things. It's not perfection. It's baseball. So anyway, my sermon is over. I'm going to step off of my soapbox. But you triggered something in me, Destin.
Ah, I guess I did something right. That moment right there, Jason, is like when you're in a press conference and you get the question that finally gets to the manager, finally gets the player rolling. All right, we got him. Now we're good. Let's run it.
Got him. Yeah, nice work. Nice work, sir.
I tip my hat. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thought exercise. I'll say that. It really is to talk about this rotation. But I at least deserve some credit because I didn't say it was time for Jackson Wolf after one start in the organization, which I
no,
really...
No, you just said organization, so you're banished from baseball land. Go back to the rink.
Back to Penguins world, I guess.
The organization.
I did it.
It's America, buddy.
I've done it 5 times this year. I hope you know I've been keeping track of the number of podcasts I say it in. It's been fun.
Really?
Yeah, it's bad. It's really bad. And it's so bad because, like, literally it coincides with whenever I most recently do hockey writing. Because then I do put, like, yesterday I'm there at the Dubas press conference. I put organization in the story. It's going to come out in the baseball podcast the next day. It's inevitable. It's a curse.
Dude, I forget when you did this. I think you might have been on the road. You wrote that somebody draws into the lineup.
Yeah.
And I was like, I am going to get him for this.
Yep.
Draws into the, that's a hockey term. Yep. Draws into, you don't draw into a baseball lineup, you play.
Yeah. There's no face off, but I said, draw, yeah. Yeah. I was called out.
But to be fair, baseball has its own goofy terms. I mean, every sport does, but you know, it's so funny that, you know, you get the start in another sport or you start or you play, but in hockey, you draw into the lineup.
Yeah. It's fun. I'm glad that you pick up on those things because it's like you can very much relate to it with the Pirates Penguins beat writing background. You know exactly where I'm coming from. And it's
and I love that your hockey lingo is like Marc-Andre Fleury's English used to be. Fleury would go home to Montreal and then he'd come back and his English would be all screwed up because he spent the whole summer speaking French. It's like you go up to hockey for one day, they trade Erik Karlsson, you come back saying organization. Carlson's speaking today. I don't know if you're going, but I'm scared to see what you're going to come back with at the park today. Oh, yeah. Boy.
I might come back with some poutine if I make my way up there. Be careful.
Poutine.
See? Okay, I'm not that Canadian yet.
Poutine.
See? Ankle size.
Medicine.
Yeah. Poutine. I'm learning. I need these educational lessons before I head up there, but I'm glad.
I don't have any educational lessons for anybody. That's not on this podcast. It's another one.
Well, on this podcast, we stand for Jackson Wolf because he impressed me. He looked really impressive. It was only a bullpen session, of course. But then, of course, saw some highlights of him and making the first start. I'm going to try to make this analogy respectfully to both prospects because they're individual guys and they're different. But I see a lot of Anthony Solometto in him. I really do. With the funky delivery, lefty, tall guy, lanky, deceptive. You know, the fastball looks faster than it really is. Certainly Solometto's is faster, but Wolf was a name that I held myself back on bringing up because he is not ready, at least I don't think, after one start with the franchise and, you know, coming over in the trade from San Diego. They probably need a little bit more time to see what they have in him. They didn't with Bailey Falter, of course, kind of throwing him right into the rotation. But he's a guy that I'm sure you're intrigued by him too. Wolf was somebody that I looked at and thought they might have something very – I don't want to say Tyler Anderson because that was more, you know, just a year and change of, you know, remedying a guy and getting his career back on track, or Jose Quintana, another one. But, like, you know, this seems like another projectable lefty that the Pirates could work with, at least just based on what I saw. The eye test passed for me of this guy has a fun delivery that could be really confusing for some big league hitters. I'm curious what they have in him.
Yeah, same, man. Same. I know it's very early, and so I'm not going to die on this hill. But right now, as we stand here on August 8th, I really like what the Pirates did at the trade deadline.
Yeah,
I was watching some of the Padres-Dodgers game and Rich Hill's first start in San Diego. It was not great. it was not great at all. And let's not forget, like, that's who they got back in this thing. I have not hated Alfonso Rivas. I thought he had a very good game in Milwaukee, some professional at-bats, plays the position well enough. I don't know if there's anything there, but it's something to get them through the end of the regular season. I know that much. And I don't think it's out of place to think maybe long-term a little bit more. Dude's hit in AAA. I'll give him that. You know, and Jackson Wolf, as you're saying, Andrew, is, you know, a big part of this thing. They've needed pitching depth. They need pitching depth to get through now until the end of the regular season. And they need some other guys who are going to be options starting next year. I know it's great to think about Ortiz and Jared Jones and Salamedo and when Burroughs comes back and Brubaker and Priester, and we're going to get a bunch of questions about, oh, they have too many arms. What are they going to do? Like, it never works out. As you saw for this, you can never have too much pitching. And so you've got a 6'7 lefty who's got a funky delivery, as you're talking about, and can get guys out, you know, was highly thought of in another organization as well. I like that a lot. And I like Bailey Falter. To me, I lump him in that same category where, you know, he was pitching in Philly in a different environment, different expectations, comes over to Pittsburgh. They're already talking about his, you know, different repertoires, doing things differently, changes his changeup to a splitter, his, you know, working on throwing a two-seamer more, something he's done throughout his career. And the Phillies were adamant about using four-seamers. Well, I mean, if you're going to let a guy pitch the way he's comfortable, that's a plus sign when we're talking about player-centric culture and what guys can do. I like Falter's first start. I'm going to see where he goes from here. But, you know, you like those guys, the Johnny Severino kid and the Carlos Santana trade. I certainly hated losing Santana, but I like the return. I had another conversation with somebody yesterday about how much and how highly thought of this kid is in the minor leagues for his body, projectability, that sort of thing. And I just think they got some interesting pieces there, and Jackson Wolf is certainly one.
Yeah, no, certainly a lot of pieces. And you bring up Falter. I mean, he's somebody that, you know, you mentioned get a chance to see him in Milwaukee. I'm excited to see him on this homestand because he kind of falls into that category, too, of guys who, you know, hides the ball well and has some enhanced velocity or, you know, perceived velocity or time you want to use. Like, I'm excited to see that. And I thought, yeah, not to, you know, it's really difficult to, I forget exactly who said this, but it was somebody on the national level talking about trade grades and how it's hard to do, like, right in the aftermath to evaluate trades. But it's like, the early indications for me is I'm with you on the trade deadline. The Pirates approached this correctly in the sense that you weren't trading blue chip coveted, retainable talent, you know, stuff that you can, you know, Isaac Rich Hill, right? That's not somebody who have club control for 3 to 4 years, but you pair him with G-Man Choi, you got some legitimate guys back, or at least some guys that you think fairly highly of. I'm really curious to see what they have in all of them, really in general, but especially the two pitching talents in Wolf and Falter. They're two guys that come to the forefront for me. But yep. Anything else we might have missed here, Jason, or are we just kind of about tapping out in this week's talk?
I think it's a sound debriefing, sir. I think we did an excellent job. I think this is one of the best podcasts that was ever produced, and I think it's all because of you, Andrew.
Wow. I'm going to disagree with pretty much everything you said. Especially with the sir component. I don't know that I deserve that. I'm 23. Yeah. But yeah, I'll take it. Pleasure as always. A pleasure as always, Jason. And that's all the time we have today for our latest breakdown. Be sure to hit the like button and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Stay updated with our latest content. And if you haven't already, check out our subscription deal in the description. $6, 6 months of access. That's plenty of sports news to keep up with, and you don't want to miss it. Thank you, everybody. And we will see you all next time.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you liked the video, please like it and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you enjoyed it on Apple Podcasts, please rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. For 6 months of digital access to post-gazette.com for just $6, click the link down in the description.